SF Signal, Episode 55, Panel Discussion. What's your favorite alien invasion story? This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight, I have all sorts of people here to talk about our topic. Let's go down the list and say hello to Jeff.
Hi, Jeff Patterson. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com.
And Lisa.
Hi, I'm Lisa Pate Spindler, and you can find me at lisapatespindler.com, where I host the Danger Gal blog.
Very cool. Fred.
Hi, it's Fred Kish. I'm found at the Lensman's Children, where I do not review Amish romance novels.
Jay.
Hi, I'm Jay Garman, internet entrepreneur by day and completely slacker blogger at jgarman.net pretty much the rest of the time.
Jamie.
Jamie Todd Rubin. I'm a science fiction writer and blogger, jamietoddrubin.com, and I write the Wayward Time Traveler column for SF Signal.
Very cool. Hi, John.
How you doing, Patrick? Resident blogger here at SF Signal. How you doing?
Oh, I should hit record. No one's gonna fall for that? Okay, never mind. So this week's topic, what is your favorite alien invasion story? And this can be anything. It can be a novel, a short story, a novella. It could be a movie, a comic book, a TV show. Anything. Anything is fair game. So let's start with Jay.
Well, I'm going to pull one way out of the bottom of my bag of tricks and go with the aptly named Invasion series from DC Comics in 1988. This one has a fond place in my heart because it's what got me started in comics, but it also holds the distinction of being perhaps the only good comic book crossover event not called Crisis on Infinite Earths.
And give our listeners just the quick boilerplate. What was it about?
Basically, the seven or eight worst alien races in the DC Comics universe all get together to attack Earth at the same time in sort of a reverse interstellar United Nations. And it's written by Keith Giffen, who comic book nerds will know is one of the great comic writers of all time. And it's illustrated in equal parts by Todd McFarlane and Bart Sears, who are two extreme heavyweights. And the fact that 25 years ago, roughly, that those three guys got together to do a crossover, which would literally cost millions of dollars today to get them all in the same room. This comic book crossover, besides having some great scenes, some great moments, and some genuine drama, which never happens in comic books anymore, at least in the main superhero continuity, actually had lasting consequences that have not been retconned in the last two and a half decades. Because basically this is this crossover where they explain where superheroes come from and why they exist. And they've never taken that explanation away. I won't give it away. That contribution to DC continuity has survived longer than pretty much any other contribution to the timeline. It's still there, and they still use it.
Wow, that's awesome. Hey, Lisa?
Yes?
Yeah, quick creak in your chair.
Oh, sorry.
What's your favorite?
My personal favorite would be Childhood's End, Arthur C. Clarke. And every time that I would watch the original and the latest V series, I would think of it because it was so iconic with the giant saucer motherships over all the major planets. I also kind of polled a lot of my friends, and there were two others that popped up over and over again, and one would be Robotech.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Zentradi.
Yes, exactly. And then the other would be the Skrull Secret Invasion series, Marvel, that came up a couple times, too. With the shapeshifters who took over all of Marvel's heroes.
Yep, and then you had the Super Skrull.
Right.
Yep, that was a good one. I you know what? Robotech is an awesome one. I loved Robotech. And I guess that's actually like they took several different Japanese series and they kind of cut them and Americanized them and forced them into a continuity.
Yes.
So, because that's why you had Robotech, and then you had Robotech, the Robotech Masters, and then you had the Invent War, and those were actually three completely different series that they took and kind of melded into one long-running series.
For some reason, the one that really sticks in my head is the Macross Saga. That's the one that
that was the original. Yep, that's the original. Rick Hunter, Lisa Hayes, all that kind of. Yeah, talk about your kid soap opera.
Yes, absolutely.
That was a great show. I love that show. I think I actually have that on DVD somewhere.
I know I do.
Jeff.
Well, I want to start by saying that I firmly believe that E.T. was actually a scout for an invasion force. He was left behind to gauge the gullibility of our children as well as human candy-making skills. And also, I don't know if anyone saw, but recently National Geographic ran this disaster porn special about what would happen if aliens actually invaded Earth. Mm-hmm. And they had all these experts on, but I think their research was pretty much limited to a handful of truly abysmal movies. It was all giant floating motherships and big stompy war mecha, and it just ignored so many other invasion scenarios that science fiction has played with. I'm going to go with a comic book as well. I'm going to go with a single issue of Grant Morrison's Marvel Boy. In I believe the second or third issue, he encounters a sentient corporation known as the Hexus, which gets freed from a containment cell when a ship crashes and uses the internet to take over all worldwide commerce in an attempt to enslave the human race. And the clever ending of it was that Marvel Boy manages to defeat him by releasing all of its trade secrets to its competitors, thus causing it to flee the planet. I thought it was a really neat take on the body snatcher, you know, theme where, you know, the aliens are already among us and controlling us and stuff like that, the whole They Live type of vibe. But I thought it was really cleverly done that there was this entire skyscraper that housed a corporation that had no humans in it except for the ones that were, you know, being controlled by this entity.
Very cool. John D.
Well, I got to say, the when you talk about alien invasion, the first thing I always reach for is it's easy. It's Independence Day. It's a guilty pleasure. Yes, I know it's not Shakespeare. It caters to the short attention span generations with scenes that are probably no longer than 2.5 minutes long. But darn it, if I'm flipping channels and that sucker's on, I have to stop and watch it. I cannot look away. It's just a lot of fun in a silly blow 'em up kind of way. That was my less respectable choice. My more respectable choice is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the novel by Jack Finney. Actually, a little bit of a potboiler, a little different than the film versions, but a whole lot of fun and very very gripping read. The movie, the first. I don't quite remember the 50s version, but in 79 was it, or early 80s, there was the Donald Sutherland one.
Oh yeah,
great.
And that final scene with Donald Sutherland, if you saw the movie, you know what I'm talking about, haunts my nightmares to this day. Honestly does. It's creepy and freaky and enjoyable in its own way, though not quite in the same way as the book, but also thumbs up.
Very good. Jamie.
Well, let's see. I had a hard time whittling this down, but I think if I had to give the edge to any story, alien invasion story, it would be one of the stories that's also one of my favorite all-time science fiction stories, which is Alfred Bester's They Don't Make Life Like They Used To.
Ooh,
that was fantasy and science fiction, I think, in 1963. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story, but it's basically an Adam and Eve story. It's, you know, the end of the world. There's nobody left on Earth. Well, at least in New York City anyway. And this this woman, Linda Nielsen, is sort of wandering around. And it's great because she's leaving. She wants to get new clothes, and she sees these, you know, clothing stores, department stores, and she takes dresses, but she leaves IOUs. She's that optimistic that they're going to survive. And she ends up finding this one other survivor. And they don't really know what's happening until the very, very end of the story where the aliens are revealed. And it is a good, just a great story, but it's also a romance, which is sort of pretty rare, I think, in those types of stories. So I really like that one.
Very cool. Now, I left Fred for last because I wanted to give him an extra 10 minutes to go through any other boxes in his basement that he might need to go through. Fred, what do you got for us?
Went with two classics and one relatively recent book. I cannot believe that we got all the way through here and nobody mentioned my first choice, which was The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
It was on my list.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, amazing to think of how many stories came out of it or were inspired by it. a couple of movies, one radio play, two TV series, one that never was launched, one that was launched.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think the book is still the best of all his versions.
Now, I'll tell you what, Fred, that the War of the Worlds TV show, I really dug that. That was a good show.
Yeah, it was a good show, but I still think the book achieved some creepiness that nothing has ever matched. You know, like the scene when the red weed is taken over and you've got the main character hiding in the ruins with the curate, and the curate gets captured by the Martians and pulled out, you know, by his heels or whatever. I mean, that's, you know, creepy stuff. It's like H.P. Lovecraft type of creep. For the other end of things, where we invade, I think that Ray Bradbury and certain parts of the Martian Chronicles is excellent. You know, you have a couple expeditions that go to Mars and get killed by the Martians. Then we end up killing the Martians the same way we killed the Martians in War of the Worlds, through disease. So, and then commerce invades Mars and they put up houses and stuff. So that's fun. Then for more recent work, I had to go with, of course, something from one of those National Geographic and other alien invasion specials, John Ringo's Looking Glass, Into the Looking Glass, where the book starts off with an equivalent of a nuclear bomb going off in Florida, and things go downhill from there. It's just a fun adventure novel that I reread every couple of years, and, you know, just would love to see that as a movie.
Very cool. Yeah. I have a couple I want to throw out there for you guys, because I noticed no one mentioned them. X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
The X-Files, I mean, the entire story arc from season one on was about the alien invasion coming slowly to Earth. Anybody remember that? It was, they were the virus and the virus, right? Aliens, yeah. And all that kind of good, mm-hmm, stuff.
My problem with the X-Files always was that, yeah, the truth was out there, but I don't think they ever planned it. It just never really fit together for me.
They didn't really have a plan.
No.
The Cylons did.
The Cylons, yeah. Well.
Robotech was on my list. V.
Oh, yes.
The original V. The original V still, I mean, I think that they did such a great job, you know, with the reveal and, you know, and the guy, you know, the Beastmaster crawling through the ducts of the ship, and he comes across, you know, the person eating the mouse or something like that. I mean, it was just an awesome, awesome thing when it came out. War of the Worlds was on my list. Roddenberry's Earth Final Conflict.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Good one.
That was a good show. That, I mean, it was weird. You know, it was in that whole 90s syndicated television rush that was going on.
I stopped watching that when Boone left. Did it stay good?
I think it did for a little while. And then it just, you know, I mean, as what happens is they can't keep anybody in the syndicated shows, and then you just had more and more cast members leaving and different things happening. So, but it was pretty good. And then Earth 2. And in Earth 2, we were the invaders.
I
loved Earth 2.
The series, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We
Brown apology there.
I'm getting a lot of echo from somebody. I don't know who. Earth 2 the people who get on the ship and they're heading off to another planet, and they kind of break out from Earth because Earth doesn't really want them to leave. And then they wake up and their ship is crashing and falling apart. And they all have to hit they have to get in the escape pods, and they crash land. And then it's a matter of, you know, trying to find their stuff. And they find out that there's already a race on the planet, even though it's supposed to be uninhabited. And they don't really want us there.
Yeah.
So another great little thing. And that's like Fred, that's flipping it on its end a little bit. We're the invaders.
Yeah. Kudos to you guys for thinking of that. I didn't even think of that. You know, us as the invaders. Hey, I might add one more. You just got me. I guess because you took because of what you just mentioned, Patrick. The Genocides by Thomas M. Dish.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, that was really dark. Essentially, we were vermin to the invading aliens. That, you know, where they basically just, you know, insecticide across the earth, right? Just trying to wipe us out. And it was they were trying to use the earth to grow these, you know, these plants and all that stuff. And we were just vermin in their garden.
Yep.
And it was, yeah, it was like, it was really, you know, just really well written, really good, really good story.
Well, I think everybody on the panel can agree with me on this point. When it comes to, I mean, the best written, best acted, best production of any alien invasion movie ever would have to be Battlefield Earth.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I was actually leaning towards Destroy All Monsters, but...
It's funny you mentioned Battlefield Earth, because I had Barry Malzberg's Dwellers of the Deep on my list, which sort of it's recursive science fiction, but it there's a whole thread in there about the aliens wanting to get this copy, needing this copy of the May 1950 Tremendous magazine, which of course the May 1950 Astounding is the issue in which Dianetics, the first Dianetics essay appeared. And so there's the whole balance of the universe depends on getting this, this magazine. But, you know, I also had, Who Goes There on my list by Don A. Stewart, also known as John Campbell.
You know, go ahead.
Which later turned into, you know, the movie The Thing in 1951. So,
well, yeah, one of the things that got me when I was watching that National Geographic special the other day was that, I mean, you know, Body Snatchers, The Thing, Day of the Triffids, the whole idea of a biological invasion as opposed to, hi, here's our big machines that are going to destroy you. That's one of those tropes that has been played and played well so many times. I remember when they made the movie version of Heinlein's The Puppet Masters, and everybody called it a Body Snatchers ripoff. And it was like, well, you people need to do your research.
Well, and I'll throw out there one more. This is a cult favorite. This is a cult, and this is all kidding aside. This is a cult favorite. I remember this movie to this day. I remember when it came out. It was John Carpenter. They Live.
Oh yeah,
Rowdy Roddy Piper, awesome. WWF, wrestling guy, in the movie where when they put the sunglasses on, the special sunglasses, they can see the aliens.
Yeah, that was probably the best. The other subgenre is the whole, you know, what I mentioned before. They're already here and doing stuff around us. That was one of my favorite examples of it. The other one was an X-Files ripoff show that came out called Dark Skies.
Yep, I remember that.
It took place in the 60s where the aliens were already here and they were traveling from body to body, and every episode they had a different, you know, dead celebrity guest played by an actor who sort of looked like someone, you know. There was a great Jim Morrison episode, I remember.
You remind me of, there's a scene in X-Files that there's a couple. Number one, X-Files did a couple things that really creeped me out. To this day, the family of who kept inbreeding.
Yes, that was a creepy episode.
That is the creepiest episode ever of anything I've ever seen in my life, and I cannot watch it. I cannot watch that show.
Stopped watching the show after that one.
That was
it for her.
Oh, that was bad. But the other one is there was a scene where I think it's Mulder is in Russia and he gets captured, and they strap him down to the bed, and they're dripping the oil into his eye, and it's just like, ooh, you know, that's just another one of those just super creepy scenes. Let's go around and do some final thoughts real quick. John D, final thoughts on anything that everybody else has said?
Good choices all around. Kudos to Fred and Patrick for picking humans as the alien invaders, and I can't believe that I didn't think of War of the Worlds or the Thing, or Who Goes There. Great picks.
Jay, final thoughts.
Just one little last addition to the Us as Invaders. There's a great episode of Next Generation called First Contact where Enterprise is the invading force, so to speak. And they really do a great job of flipping it on its head where they really sort of portray them with a sort of suspicious menace, which is a nice inversion of the formula. And I've always had a soft spot for that particular episode.
That is a good episode. Jamie?
I would just say that I have two books sitting on my shelf that I have not yet read, but I've heard are great alien invasion stories, and I've been wanting to read them. One is Gordon R. Dixon's The Way of the Pilgrim, and the other is Robert Silverberg's The Alien Years.
Just about to mention that.
Yeah, and I think those especially after sitting in on this, I'd like to go back and read those.
Fred?
Well, after talking about Dark Skies and X-Files, I'm going to have to go out and order the original The Invaders with Roy Thinnes.
Ooh, yes.
Because that was the show that creeped me out as a kid.
Very cool. Lisa?
Really great choices all around. I'm just going to leave you with two words. Mars Attacks.
The comic book or the movie?
For me, the movie.
Gotcha. Okay, Jeff?
I'll also give honorable mention to Tommyknockers. And mention for Fred, Volume 2 of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is a retelling of War of the Worlds through the eyes of the various fictional characters. Plus, it has the Nautilus taking down a Martian war machine, which is awesome.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do not touch that dial. I have one more thing to share with you, and then I got some other stuff to share with you. So more than one thing. First up, Paul Weimer. Paul was unable to join us for the panel, but he called in with a voicemail. So here's Paul's take.
Hi, this is Paul Weimer of Blog J Vistan Style, writing for the Yes Signal and the Functional Nerds and other places, calling in on the show topic, what is your favorite alien invasion story? Well, let's take it piece by piece. For my favorite novel would be Footfall by Jerry Parnell and Larry Niven. I think it's the classic science fiction alien invasion story, and with just a few changes to reflect changing technology, you probably could write that novel today and it would still stand up as the classic definitive novel of alien invasion and humans fighting back and kicking butt. Or if you want to go for longer work, there's the World War series by Harry Turtledove, where you have alien invasion meeting alternate history as the aliens invade in the middle of World War II. I can say no to those two great cases going together. As far as movies, there's Independence Day. Yes, it's a popcorn movie, but it's a fun popcorn movie. Although Patrick and other Apple fans are probably amused by the idea that Apple saves the world, I've always thought that Bill Pullman made a credible action hero president taking on the aliens. I even think that President Bush's flight suit antics were inspired by Pullman's appearance and performance as President Whitmore. Computer games? Half-Life 2. A great action game put out by Valve, an alien race to combine has invaded the Earth by means of dimensional portals, and as Gordon Freeman, your job is to take the fight to them. An excellent storyline and immersion into a post-invasion, post-apocalyptic nightmare world. And finally, for a short story, my favorite is William Tenn's The Liberation of Earth. It really brings his taste for satire and acerbic social commentary into a somewhat different alien invasion story. And those are my answers. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, Paul. And that's it for alien invasion stories. Now let's talk about zombies. Jessica Strider has sent in her new author spotlight for the month.
Hi, this is Jessica Strider from scififanletter.blogspot.com with this month's new author spotlight. If you're a fan of zombie fiction and liked The Loving Dead by Amelia Beamer, Breathers by S.G. Brown, or Happy Hour of the Damned by Mark Henry, then check out Jessie Peterson. Her books include Married with Zombies and Flip This Zombie. The dust jacket for Married with Zombies reads, a heartwarming tale of terror in the middle of the zombie apocalypse. Meet Sarah and David. Once upon a time they met and fell in love, but now they're on the verge of divorce and going to couples counseling. On a routine trip to their counselor, they notice a few odd things. The lack of cars on the highway, the missing security guard, and the fact that their counselor, Dr. Kelly, is ripping out her previous client's throat. Meet the zombies. Now Sarah and David are fighting for survival in the middle of the zombie apocalypse. But just because there are zombies doesn't mean your other problems go away. If the zombies don't eat their brains, they might just kill each other. Thanks for listening.
Sounds awesome. Thank you, Jessica. Alrighty, you know the spiel. If you want to help the podcast out, there's a couple things you can do. Number one, you can go to iTunes, give us a couple stars, write us a review. You can tell your friends, hey, there's this really cool podcast you should be listening to. It's called SF Signal. That kind of stuff. If you have any thoughts on this topic or any of the other topics that we've covered on the podcast, you can give us a call on the voicemail line, 720-277-9082. If you don't want to make that phone call, go to sfsignal.com and click on one of the podcast posts, and you'll see a Google widget. It is a Flash widget, so if you have Flash turned off on your browser, you'll have to turn it back on. But then you just plug in your number, and it'll call you. Let's see. What else? Follow John D. on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. He tweets things all the time. Also, go to sfsignal.com each and every week. There's all sorts of really cool content there. Stuff that you're going to want to read, like mind melds, and there's the video of the week, and just all kinds of stuff. So just hit that every day, or save it, you know, subscribe in your feed burner or something like that, and you'll be good to go. What else? Later on this week, we have our interview with Holly Black, so that'll be on Thursday. Come back and check that out. If you want to find me online, I'm pretty easy. It's ATFMB, twitter.com/ATFMB, www.atfmb.com, and I write the occasional post for sfsignal.com. I think that's it for me. I am going to go do something else. Bye.